I can read anything. I can read everything.
Sometimes a book comes along that is so Minnesotan, it demands to be shared. Even if you feel like you've lived the plot yourself, perhaps too many times. Slowly, the ground is covered by white, each flake whooshing down to take its place among the others, until it is finally announced, Snow Day! The lure of the outside is great, and two young friends meet in the yards between their houses to start the intensive labor required to build the perfect fort from which to hold an epic battle. The snowballs fly, until one friend must warn the other about imminent danger about to slide off the roof, and the snowball fight is necessarily abandoned for another winter joy. Soon, though, cold fingers and red noses force our intrepid adventurers inside for some hot chocolate with marshmallows, which reminds them of unfinished business still waiting in the yard. If you yearn for the joy of a snow day spent outside, or want to share this particular type of joy with friends who might live in warmer climates, check out The Snowball Fight by Beth Ferry and Tom Lichtenheld. I love a good memoir, and a graphic novel memoir with defining illustrations is hard to beat. Carlos lived in Cuba with his family, including grandparents who owned a farm across the road and an aunt who lived next door. He was happy playing with friends, catching tarantulas, and going to the beach with his siblings and his abuelo. After his father won the lottery, though, Carlos and his family packed up and moved to the city so his papi could open a furniture-making business. While Carlos adjusted to life in the city, however, Fidel Castro plots to take over Cuba from Batista. The political tension increases, and Carlos's life gets less predictable and significantly more frightening, until the day his papi disappeared, and Carlos's sense of safety crumbled into fear. Neighbors told on neighbors, private property was seized, and quickly it became too dangerous to go to school. Carlos and his family are invited back to the country to stay with his abuela and abuelo until things might become safer in the city. A knock on the door reveals a monumental surprise, which ends in a terrifying journey. This book, How to Say Goodbye in Cuban, is the story of the author's father, a story kept quiet until many decades had passed. It is a significant historical memoir, and its importance is evident, especially as our country finds itself at historic crossroads. I very much appreciated this book, How to Say Goodbye in Cuban, by Daniel Miares, and I think you might too. Anybody know what a pocket bear is? I didn't. Until I read Pocket Bear by Catherine Applegate and did a little deep diving. Pocket bears, also called mascot bears and soldier bears, were tiny stuffed animals, usually around 3.5 inches tall, that soldiers would tuck into their pockets as both a safety talisman and a reminder of loved ones at home. Along with their tiny size, a hallmark of the bears was their slightly turned up eyes, so when the pocket was opened, often in the mud of the trenches, the bear would be looking at the soldier. These mascot bears reached their height of popularity during World War I. The pocket bear in Applegate's story is the lead stuffy at the Second Chances home, where stuffed animals are washed, mended, and given another go at it. The home is run by Elizaveta and her daughter Dasha, themselves refugees and victims of the war in Ukraine. Told through the eyes of Zephyrina, a cat who wanders through the night and often brings gifts home to Elizaveta and Dasha, Pocket Bear is chock full of hope, wonder, and a whole lot of love and care during a time when this world needs a lot of that. Super short chapters makes this a wonderful read aloud. Next time you're at the library, check out Pocket Bear by Catherine Applegate.
This is What We're Reading, and we're hearing book recommendations from children's librarian Tracy Campa. Up next, can you believe it's already award season? That's right. Tracy's got a review of the big two awards given in children's books and some of her favorite titles from 2025.
And now, my friends, it is time for the real excitement of the day. Today is indeed Newbery Monday. Today is the day that the American Library Association announces their Youth Media Awards, which include the Coretta Scott King Awards, which are given to outstanding African American authors and illustrators, the Michael L. Prince Award, awarded to a book that exemplifies excellence in literature for young adults, the Pirabel Prey Awards, presented to authors and illustrators who best portray the Latino experience, the Robert Seibert Medal, given to the best informational book, the Sidney Taylor Book Award, given to a book that best portrays the Jewish experience, the Theodore Seuss Geisel Award, given to the best beginner reader of the year, and a whole host of other awards. The program culminates in what I refer to as the Big Two: the Randolph Caldecott Medal, given to the best illustrations in a picture book, and the John Newbery Medal, given to the book that has made the most significant contribution to children's literature in the past year. It is these last two that I spend a great deal of time thinking about over the course of a year. I follow Newbery blogs and Caldecott blogs, and I love seeing the results of the mock Newberys that are held in libraries and schools across the country. So, what do I think will win the Newbery this year? Well, I have no idea. But my favorite so far is The Trouble with Heroes by Kate Messner. But I also think that Pocket Bear is fabulous. The Undead Fox of Deadwood Forest by Aubrey Hartman, which I talked about previously, is wildly unique and left me thinking. Always a good sign. I really hope that Jewel Parker Rhodes gets recognition for her fabulous Will's Race for Home, which I talked about at the end of 2024, thinking it was eligible for last year's awards. Turns out it was a 2025 copyright and therefore eligible this year. There are, of course, several books I haven't brought before you that I think are really good, including The Winter of the Dollhouse by Laura Amy Schlitz and All the Blues in the Sky by Renee Watson. Two nonfiction books I hope receive recognition are A World Without Summer by Nicholas Day, which discusses the global ramifications of an earthquake in the very early 1800s and connects that to not only global hunger in subsequent years, but also the writing of the book Frankenstein. And a wonderfully thorough account of Jim Jones and the People's Temple cult titled Death in the Jungle, written by the incomparable Candace Fleming. I will happily read anything Fleming writes, and I'm very glad I picked up this book. I was not quite 14 when the People's Temple members had terminated themselves by drinking punch laced with cyanide. As a result, I, along with my peers, would often describe somebody who went along with somebody else's thoughts as somebody who was drinking the Kool-Aid. Fleming's book dove so much deeper and carved a literary trail through the jungle of Guyana, and fleshed out a story that kept me turning pages long into the night. I hope the book receives deserved recognition, and under the heading of When You Know Better, You Do Better, I'll probably stop using the phrase drinking the Kool-Aid quite so glibly. If you are free around 10 o'clock Central Time this morning, tune in to the ALA Youth Media Awards, where you too can hear it firsthand. Direct your favorite device to ala.unicron.com. That's ala.unicron.com. unikron.com and be among the first to know. Happy reading!